Well, hello everyone, and welcome to the Outsource Report. I am here, your fearless leader. I am Michael Baptiste, and I want to welcome you here to this fantastic broadcast. You know, we got something very exciting lined up for you today, and you know, to be honest with you, I'm very excited as well to hear what you're about to hear, because we're going to get some golden nuggets and some really powerful secrets from an outsourcing expert. I mean, someone who's been outsourcing for nearly half a decade, actually more than half a decade now. And I'm very excited. As you can hear, I'm very pumped to have Miracle Wanzo here on the call today. Welcome to the call, Miracle.
Thank you for having me.
Awesome. So listen, hey, I've been trying to get with you for over the last couple of days and weeks. And, you know, I'm very excited to learn from you. I know there's a lot that you're going to share on this call. And I know we don't have a lot of time, so I want to get started right away, if that's okay with you.
Awesome. Let's get started.
Okay, excellent. So can you tell us a little bit about, you know, what you do?
Sure. I'm an online retailer. I make things, I buy things, and I sell things. That's pretty much the gist of it. So that means I have e-commerce sites, as well as selling on third-party marketplaces. But that's primarily Amazon, because a lot of people think of eBay. And I started off selling on eBay, but I don't currently sell on eBay.
Very interesting. And so how did you get started with like online retail and eBay and Amazon and all this stuff?
A long time ago, around 1998. That's when I got started selling on eBay. I sold on eBay for a couple years, and then I transitioned into having my own websites. And Amazon came later. Amazon has really evolved over the years. Initially, back in the old days, Amazon was kind of a little bit like eBay, and then they moved towards a more professional setup for third-party sellers, and now they have a full platform for other companies that want to sell their products through Amazon. So that's kind of how I got started.
That's very exciting. You got into an industry that really exploded, and you were there for the growth as well with Amazon. That's very exciting. So with your experience with online marketing, obviously you started off with retail. With everyone who's listening right now to this call, they're interested in outsourcing and, of course, growing their online business. How should they gauge whether or not this information is right for them? Like, what advice would you give to them in regards to listening and taking in this information?
I think now entrepreneurs have access to things that weren't available, you know, 10 years ago when I got started. It wasn't easy to find people that were affordable, that had specific types of expertise that could help you grow your business. And so you either had to learn how to wear too many hats at times, or you only had these services or consultants, and you kind of got stuck between a rock and a hard place because you needed the help, but maybe it was just way too expensive and out of your price range. So there was this big gap between where you were and where you wanted to be. So whether or not someone's interested in retail or, you know, selling products as opposed to other forms of online businesses, the information on outsourcing is still extremely helpful, because now entrepreneurs coming into the game have the ability to bridge a gap that, you know, was insurmountable a decade ago.
You're absolutely right. And I mean, there's a plethora of information out there about outsourcing. So for anyone who wants to get involved, it's really wide open. So I'm just so impressed that you were there back, you know, in the early Amazon days, and you've now evolved with the site, and you've added, you know, team of outsourcers to your business. So can you tell us a little bit about, you know, how you got started with outsourcing and what was so appealing about outsourcing to you?
I got started with Odesk. I think that's how a lot of people got started. Mm-hmm. And it's just because Odesk has a system that makes it relatively simple to find people. And I use Odesk maybe for a little over a year. It has a lot of pitfalls. And experiencing those pitfalls, I took a break from outsourcing for a few months to kind of recollect and get everything together because I just didn't feel that model was working for me. And I got back into outsourcing after finding the information on outsourcing from the Philippines, like John Jonas's blog and things of that nature, and got into that and said, okay, maybe I can make it work this way. And that's what I started doing. I started hiring people directly as opposed to using freelance sites and having a bunch of people doing very specific things and trying to manage, you know, a bunch of freelancers. And I've just stuck with that way of outsourcing ever since.
Wow. That is excellent. And so how many years in total would you say you've been outsourcing since discovering these secrets?
I'd say about 6, roughly, give or take.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's awesome. And so what would you say are the top 5 areas that an entrepreneur should concentrate on in regards to outsourcing for their online business?
That is a great question. So let me backtrack a little bit because this isn't specifically about outsourcing because I've had employees and contractors in the United States as well.
Okay.
So most people, when they talk about outsourcing, they're looking at, you know, people who are contractors who may be in the United States, but for the most part are overseas. And one of the things that I learned the hard way that I would advise every entrepreneur to pay very close attention to is once you start to add outsourcers, make sure you keep a balance between people who are admin and people who are revenue generating. Because a lot of times people go for taking tasks off their desk and they start hiring people that can do some of their busy work to free up their time. And that's a great way to start. But if you're not careful, you can end up with too many people that are administrative and then you're the only person that's really generating revenue or engaged in the tasks that generate revenue. So when you're starting to outsource, sometimes for some entrepreneurs, it may make more sense. You know, like usually the low hanging fruit is just for them to get like an administrative assistant that can handle a lot of their busy work. That's the low hanging fruit. For some entrepreneurs, it may make more sense for them to get someone that can handle their SEO or that can handle some of their content marketing, their customer outreach, their, you know, pay-per-click, their social media, display advertising. It may make more sense to have someone do that while the entrepreneur still like deals with their busy work because that person can bring in more revenue. So let me give you like a real example of what I mean. Like for many years, I've tried to hire a programmer and it took me a very long time to finally get someone who was really, really good and reliable and can actually do what they said they would do. And that many years was a lot of starting and stopping. Like I'd find someone, they seemed great. You'd find out a month in, 2 months in, they weren't working out and I'd get discouraged. And then I'd, you know, try again after a few months. It wasn't like I was constantly going out and trying to find someone. The great thing about having a programmer is sometimes there are things that you want to do for your business, but they are either really, really time consuming or just too difficult for you to do. Like you just may not have the skill set. So because we sell products, one of the things that brings in more money is to get all those products listed in a whole bunch of different shopping engines. And there are companies out there that provide that service. But even then, sometimes, you know, it may be a little technical. It may require some customization for what you sell and how you sell it to get, you know, everything set up. And those companies may want to charge like, you know, $5,000 or something for the customization to set up your feed, which could be prohibitive. But by hiring a programmer who can set that up, now you have more money coming in to offset the cost of paying that person. And then they can go and set up more and more things like that that make it easier for you to take advantage of opportunities, but money is coming in. Versus if all you do is hire administrative assistants, they may not have any revenue generation attached to them. So more money isn't coming in as a result of hiring them, but you are paying more money to pay them the more people you hire. So it's things like that. Like, you know, maybe you can hire a video, someone to help with your YouTube video marketing, you know, and then that can bring in more revenue. So you just have to keep a balance. Otherwise, you end up with too many people that cost money, and then you're the sole person responsible for generating money.
Wow. That's very deep. And I think for a lot of people listening, I mean, this is great content. I mean, I'm learning a lot here. And I think for a lot of people, a lot of entrepreneurs who are listening to this, you know, they want to outsource so that way they can increase their profits. And I think that's a very good and valid point that you just made. So what advice would you give to someone who's brand new, who's looking to outsource? They just heard this, you know, what you just said about separating, you know, administrative outsources versus revenue generating outsources. What type of advice would you give to someone who's brand new?
I think someone who's brand new is going to have to try to do all of the jobs that they need done, even if they can't do them well, because you can't necessarily rely on someone else to do something that you don't fully understand, because then you don't have the ability to make sure that they're doing it in the best method possible for your business. So you don't want to just tell someone like, okay, handle my search engine optimization. You want to at least, you know, give it a shot so that you get it, so that you can tell them what you're looking for, what not to do, which is really important, and what your standards are. So you kind of have to try it a little bit. I think a lot of people, especially if they have money to throw around, will kind of feel like they can just, you know, throw the money around and say, here, you do this, you do that, you do that. And then you end up with like no cohesive strategy for the business. So I do think someone who's just starting out has to at least give it a shot. You know, that could even be as simple as setting up WordPress, because a lot of people don't realize there are like little details to that, that you may not like the decisions someone else makes about setting up, you know, your WordPress site. You may have a specific way that you want it done, but you have to kind of get under the hood to know what that is. And then once they have a good handle on what they need done and how they want it done, then sit there and just figure out, like, I need to balance work that I don't want to do so I can focus on running my company and growing my company with making sure that the people I hire can help contribute to the revenue generation. And for every company, that's, you know, that's a little bit different. It's with retail, it's, you can see things like helping get the products out there, whether it's social media or other websites or shopping comparison engines, things like that, and advertising. But for every business, that could be just a little bit different.
Yes, absolutely. And so what, you know, do you have a formula for like the way you go about your outsourcing? Is there like a strategy in place for outsourcing?
Yeah, there is. I do the majority of my job searching, my employee searching on onlinejobs.ph.
Okay.
I've gone through phases where I said, well, let me use something else and use something else. And then I kind of end up just coming back to that. And typically now I like to have things really organized, and I'm in a mastermind for people who manufacture products. And one of the guys in it,
awesome,
he sends people to a Google form, which I thought was great. So you have a Google form that goes to a Google spreadsheet. You figure out what information you want to have everyone give you that's going to help you filter people. So for me, it's things like, what is their availability? How much are they looking for? You know, I already have their profile from Online Jobs, so I know that I was interested in them before I invited them. It could be things like, what method you'll use to interview them. Are you going to use Skype, Gmail, Facebook, because you don't want to have to go back and forth to figure that out. All those questions to make it really, really easy. And the last time, when the last person I recruited was the programmer, and that was the method that I used, I sent everyone to a Google form, asked very specific questions. And then because it comes up in a spreadsheet, it's really easy for you to look at that spreadsheet and say, no, maybe, you know, definite yes. Yeah. And then because you already have their preferred contact method, you know, if it's Skype, you already have their Skype ID, so you can just go and add them. You don't have to email them and say, okay, what's your Skype ID? It was a really organized way to handle it. I loved doing it that way. And I think I'm going to use that method from here on out. Yeah. And the other thing is, because sometimes people get a little, I don't know, they get a little nervous about asking people to fill out a form because they think, oh, well, maybe people don't want to fill out all this information. It's a great screening tool. If someone is halfway filling out the form and it's incomplete, don't consider them any further, because that's an indication of how they're going to work. It's in a way, you know, you're looking for little attention to detail, because the more precise and professional someone is, you know, the more likely they are to carry that through their work. Mm-hmm. And so because that was a programming position and I have no ability to really judge whether or not someone is a good programmer.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I used a third party testing service for it. Mm-hmm. And there are a lot of them out there for different types of jobs you want to hire for. And I just had, you know, I just had to trust that the test was good and was going to work and all that. And luckily he's been working out. So I feel a little confident that that's an okay way to go for someone who can't judge someone's programming skills on their own.
Right. Right. Well, honestly, I think that's a really great strategy. You know, something that's going to keep you very organized, something that helps simplify the process of hiring an outsourcer for your business. So
absolutely.
So what can you recommend some really quality outsourcing and freelance websites for our listeners?
I think, well, most people will use Odesk, and I don't. So, but it would be, you know, it would be an incomplete answer to not mention that.
Right. Right.
Definitely onlinejobs.ph is one.
Mm-hmm, yes.
There are, I don't really kind of care for the Elance and the freelancer type of thing, but I'm sure people use those with great success. It really depends on what you're looking for, because if you want a freelancer, and sometimes there are times when you do want a freelancer, you don't have enough work of a specific type to justify keeping someone continually. And that's when a freelance site is more suitable. But if you need someone more consistently and reliably, you almost have to get away from the freelance sites, because even though people say that you can find full-time people on a freelance site, the problem is that they feel like their employment is very iffy no matter what you say. So they're almost always juggling multiple clients, even if they tell you that they're working for you full time. You know, they're really trying to make sure that they always have an income, because you can cut that contract at any time.
Correct.
So, and sometimes that's an issue when you just hire someone full time from a, you know, a site that has full time people. Sometimes they take a second job, they're moonlighting too. So that's an issue, but it's more prevalent with the freelance site. So it really depends on what someone needs. You have to go to the site that fits what you're looking for.
Yes, I agree 100%. And I've had similar experiences where freelancers would take second jobs and third jobs just to make sure they have that income coming in. So yeah, so I think that's a great point. So for you, you've been doing this for several years. I mean, nearly half a more than half a decade now. Mm-hmm. What are some of the pitfalls that you've experienced and that some of our listeners should look out for, and how can they avoid those pitfalls?
Sure. So when I was on Odesk, a pitfall, and this is something you have to watch on Odesk, a pitfall is that you give people time in blocks. So you may give someone 20 hours a week, and when you want to increase the time, the increase is immediate, but when you want to reduce the time, the reduction doesn't hit into the next cycle. Mm-hmm. And so sometimes you may have given someone a certain number of hours because that's what they needed for the week that you increased their hours. Mm-hmm. And if you're not going back and immediately reducing it, now that person has the ability to bill you for that many hours. And a lot of people on that site kind of know how to play the system and keep that screen capture logged in. so that they can bill the hours, and you don't have a very big window to kind of catch these discrepancies. And I kind of felt like one of the reasons I didn't like it was because I felt like I was going to have an outsourcer just to look over the work reports to make sure that people were actually working.
Because
when you end up with a bunch of people, which it's very easy to do, right? Because you have this one person. Like for me in retail, I had someone that just edited photos, and because he had so many other clients, I couldn't have him do more. So all he did was photos. And then I had this other guy who was backup in case the other guy wasn't available, you know? And so you can kind of end up with a bunch of people able to bill you by just going in there and making sure that clock is running on that screen capture. And that happened. That really, really happened.
Wow.
And, so you have to watch that. You really, really have to watch that. When you go to having people just working for you directly, you know, part-time or full-time, you have to make sure that they're productive. So that's where, when I said an entrepreneur should at least try to do some of the work, because you'll have a good handle on how much time it should take them and what you should expect in terms of productivity. If you've never tried it, then you may not have a really good handle on that. So you have to keep people productive. If you're going to have someone set up a WordPress website, you know, you're going to have to get to a place of figuring out from start to finish how much time that should take, and making sure that you keep them productive, because when people are working from home, they, you know, stop in the middle of the day, eat, go outside, you know, that's kind of what happens. And you're not going to get a full 8 hours, but you do have to get some level of efficiency and pay attention when the efficiency starts lacking off, you know, to get them back on it. Some people use time monitoring and things like that. I don't for the people that I hire directly, because it, you know, it slows down their systems a lot of times. And it's not like they're on $3,000 machines, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I just keep that productivity standard and monitor that. Another thing you have to be aware of is one time I had a video editor, and it became painfully obvious that someone else was doing his work, because he had a certain style, and it was very good and very consistent, and he was a guy, right?
Okay.
So I get this video, and it's not about a woman's product or anything, and in the transition, there are just purple flowers on the screen. And I was like, what is this? Like, what is this? And I had to go to him and say, like, who's doing the work? Purple flowers, that's not you. This isn't feminine. Like, what happened? And it turned out that, I mean, he was a great video editor. And this is something you really have to watch out for, because I felt really, really bad for him in the end. It turned out someone else came along, was talking a big game, like, yeah, I have this business and I'm going to have all these clients, and offered him a lot more money than I was paying him. So he took that job. And he taught his wife, you know, so that's the purple flowers. And so I said, okay, well, you know, I wish you the best, but I've been in the game for a long time. I kind of know how this is going to play out. So what ended up happening was the guy never paid him. He was talking a big talk. He was going to hire all these people. You know, he was hiring them like he was going to flip it. Like, I'm going to have all these people. They're going to go get clients and do the work. And then I'm going to flip it. The client's going to pay me. And then I'm going to pay the people.
Right.
That blew up. So he worked for a certain period of time, never got paid.
Wow.
And that was that. Now he has to find another job. And that happens to a lot of people overseas who get into these arrangements. And that's why sometimes they can be very skittish about it. But nonetheless, on my end, what ended up happening was sometimes they just disappear. They go with that other client, and that's that. And then sometimes, like in this case, you know, you can kind of tell that somebody else is doing the work. Like sometimes it's a relative or a friend or something like that. And you kind of see a little inconsistency. So you kind of have to pay attention to things like that. And the other one is just, you know, somebody falls off the wagon, or they disappear, or, you know, they just become generally unreliable. So those are pretty much the caveats. I've had a couple of instances where someone who was unreliable bounced back, like, you know, very unreliable, let him go. Then he came back, you know, explained the situation, asked for another chance, and turned out to be like awesome. So it can work out. It just depends on the specifics of the circumstances.
Right.
But the guy who had his wife and the flowers in the video, I wouldn't hire him back. It was just kind of, it was like, I wouldn't have been mad if he had someone else creating the videos, because on a certain level, I think that's smart, right?
It's
like you can teach someone how to do it and whatever. Like, I wouldn't care, but it just was that he should have looked it over.
Right.
You know? He should have just checked it. So, yeah.
Yeah, the quality of the work always shows whether or not your outsource is delivering the maximum amount of productivity or not.
Yeah, like at least if you're going to have someone doing your work, check what they're doing.
No, yeah, of course. For a person on their end, I mean, they have a job to keep, so they got to make sure they're delivering quality work. Otherwise, they're going to be out of a job, which is what happened to this guy.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you've obviously been through a lot and done a lot. What would you consider to be a little known secret about outsourcing that you've discovered, in your career thus far?
I don't know if I would say it's a little known secret, but I think that some people have a little too much apprehension about it because they're control freaks, and I understand that because I can be that way also.
Okay.
So I think if people can learn to kind of back off of the need to control or have oversight over everything, or the other one that's more annoying is when people act like it's rocket science. Like, there are very few things that a business needs to outsource that it truly takes someone extremely, extremely, extremely smart to do it. So you'll see people say things like, well, I can't have someone answer my customer service emails. And then they go into all these reasons. And it's like, you don't need a PhD to handle customer service. You know, you don't have one. So it's, you know what I'm saying? Like, it's not rocket science. Like, most of the stuff can be picked up in a relatively short amount of time if someone's willing to sit and learn. So that's pretty much it. Like, give up the need to control and be willing to let some things go and let someone else do it, and even kind of sort of maybe do it a little bit their way as opposed to precisely your way.
Right.
And don't treat things like, you know, it takes a genius to execute them.
Mm-hmm. No, right on. Absolutely. Yeah. Really just keep things simple.
Yeah.
Versus really trying to complicate things. Now, I mean, you've been in business for quite a while. You know, I commend you because a lot of women, who start off in business, especially in the retail, they don't necessarily stick around for the long haul. And that same goes for men. A lot of men as well. They get into the business and they just kind of, here today, gone tomorrow. But you've been here. You've been an entrepreneur for, I mean, well over a decade now. So I want to know, what were some of your early goals starting out as an entrepreneur?
I don't think I really had big ones starting out. I wanted to have, I wanted to have a viable business that was, profitable, successful, growing. I didn't have any huge goals starting out because initially, I think there's a lot of, even today, I can kind of still feel a little amazed at what the internet has made possible, because when I started in 98, so that was a while ago, at that point, you didn't have, people were getting into e-commerce, but not people like me. It was just starting to become a thing for an entrepreneur, a small business owner, someone without a whole bunch of money and a whole bunch of resources. So back when I was getting started, a lot of people who were starting businesses were still starting, physical, real world small businesses. So even now, I'd still get amazed at what the internet has made possible, that you can transact business across the globe literally with very little resources,
Yeah.
When you think about it, like what it would have taken 20 years ago to do that, we just wouldn't have had access to. So that
really
amazes me still. So when I started out, I didn't really have big goals because I was just shocked. still in awe that this all could happen, that that you could sell something to someone anywhere, and you could buy something from halfway across the world. I mean, 20 years ago, if you wanted to manufacture in China, how would you do it?
You have to go to China, right?
and have a translator.
Yeah.
And all this other stuff. And so, yeah, I just kind of got into it. I didn't really have big goals in the beginning.
Very interesting. And I wanted to point out, because we just touched on China. I lived in China and I can speak Mandarin. So if you were 20 years ago, you could take me with you to China and we'd be A-okay. but anyway, you know, staying focused here. You know, obviously, you know, things have changed a lot, and especially from the late 90s to the mid 2000s, where we're at right now as we record this interview, a lot has changed. So for our listeners right now who are just listening, you know, they're listening like, oh yeah, America, you know, I'm there with you. You know, I've taken my black eyes, I've gotten beat down by this industry, and I'm ready to start again. You know, what type of goals and what type of, you know, both realistic long-term goals and short-term goals would you recommend for some of our listeners today?
I think a lot of that is going to depend upon how they're going to approach selling online. Regardless, whether you sell products or services or info products, you are still selling something online. And a lot of that is going to depend upon what they choose to do. Obviously, I have a lot more experience in selling physical, tangible goods, which mm-hmm. it's just what I prefer over everything else. And right. I think that someone coming into it really has to, let me take a step back, because there used to be a train of thought that there was more money to be made selling physical goods than there mm-hmm. is selling intangible goods, like info products. But now you see things like John Lee Dumas from Entrepreneur on Fire, or Pat Flynn from Smart Passive Income, who have these insanely high monthly income reports and completely either sell digital goods or have affiliate revenue or sponsorship revenue. Yep. So mm-hmm. they've mm-hmm. kind of paved the way for showing how to build a really, really high income, relatively low expense business, because the downside of selling physical goods is your cost of goods sold. You know,
of course. Mm-hmm.
with
mm-hmm.
an info product, you have that initial investment to create it, but that's it. You don't have an ongoing cost of goods sold. So it's a different game. So I think,
mm-hmm.
you know, I was going to say, you know, set your goals realistically, but you have people who are kind of blowing that out of the water.
yeah, seriously, some guys are just doing some crazy numbers online these days.
Yeah, they are mm-hmm. doing some crazy numbers, and they probably had a bunch of people who told them that, like, oh, you can't do numbers like that with this, you know, and they went out there and proved them wrong.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
I think for most people, just set them in steps, you know, have phases that they want to get to. Whatever their first barrier is, you know, for some people that first barrier may be six-figure revenues, because I don't know what the stats are overall,
mm-hmm.
but something like 97% of women-owned businesses make less than $50,000
wow.
a year in gross revenue.
97%.
Wow. Yeah.
That's a scary statistic.
Yeah, because a lot of them are kind of like hobbyish. Lifestyle-ish, and then a lot of them are low revenue service businesses, like daycare, hairstyling, and things like that, like, you know, independent hairstyling. So for a lot of people, that first marker may be to get to six figure in revenues, and then to get maybe to a quarter of a million, and a half a million, you know, and a million, then multi-million. So just set the goals in stages.
Mm-hmm.
Because at each stage, you do have a different set of problems to get over the next hurdle.
Yeah, as they say, more money, more problems, right?
Right, yeah.
Yeah, but there's another saying which I like. You know, I'd rather have people with money problems versus people without money problems.
Right.
No, seriously. So you know, I'm here. You know, I'm soaking this up. I'm sure our listeners are soaking this up as well. And I got a question that's really been burning me. It's really been on my mind because it's something I'm very passionate about. So I want to ask you, what is your definition of success, and what does it mean to succeed?
That's a good question. My definition of success is when you are able to live and do business on your own terms. Whatever that may be, because some people have really, I don't want to say simplistic, but, you know, they have simplistic goals. They just want a certain lifestyle, and however they get it, that's that. And that's success for them. And some people have, like, really, really, really high goals. Like, they want, like, very, very large businesses, lots of employees, you know, they want to be on the Inc. 500 or, you know, something like that. And that's success for them. But overall, to me, success means you're able to do it on your own terms where you don't have the burden of having to be held accountable to some other entity or some other person, or having something else kind of dictate your path in life. When you are truly able to blaze your own trail and live life on your terms, that's success.
Wow, that's very deep. That's very deep. And as you can see, even though I'm here conducting an interview, you know, I'm taking this in as if I'm a listener, because I am. And so my next question: what are some of the key components and you know, key ingredients that go into a formula and a recipe for success?
Ooh, that's interesting. Okay, so I probably don't have that many. One of the most important ones, I think, it's critical for someone to be resourceful.
Okay.
I'm sure you've seen this, and I've seen it so much, and it's probably a huge pet peeve, and I get really annoyed. Are you ever in a group, or a Facebook group, or an online forum, and someone just says something that's very, very specific, right? But a lot of people may not know what it means. And someone else comes in and they say, "What's that?" And if someone in that group is snarky, they'll do the "let me Google that for you" and put a link to it, right?
Yeah.
Because it's like we're all on the internet. Like, you can just open up another tab and you can Google it, you can research it, you can read Wikipedia and find out more about it than you ever want to know.
Okay.
And when I see people who are like that, in my opinion, like, they're not going to be successful, like, no matter what it is they're trying to do, because they're not resourceful, and they kind of sit in a place where they rely on other people to give them information, and you can't rely on other people to consistently give you information, because they get annoyed. and then sometimes people, they're really snarky, they'll start telling you anything just because that's what you get for not looking it up yourself, you know?
Wow, yeah.
And so I think for anyone trying to be successful at anything, a critical skill that someone can develop is just to be resourceful, just to know how to get answers to the questions they need to find out the information that they want. Because when you can ask someone who's very busy, who's very experienced, and who's very expensive as a consultant, when you can ask someone a very concise question that shows that you've done your homework, a lot of times they will answer it. Just to help you out, because they see that you know your stuff, you've done your homework, you're asking a very precise question that's respectful of their time and expertise, versus just kind of asking really basic questions like you want them to tell you everything and you don't want to look anything up. And for me, that's been a key for me in getting help from people and getting information from people, is that the questions are so specific that they don't feel like I'm being an idiot, or I'm not paying my dues, you know? Because you don't want someone to feel like they've worked hard, they've done all this, and here you come asking for something and you haven't paid your dues. So that's, I think that's a critical component of success, is being resourceful enough to be able to do that on your own. And it's helpful to you, but it also really helps you make connections with people and get information from people, because they'll have some level of respect for you. So now if I have specific questions about things that I stumble on that I can't really find an answer to in Google or in a book, then I can ask someone who's an expert in that field for that information because it's a precise question, which means it's a very quick answer. Because sometimes when you're asking someone who's an expensive expert, you know, they don't want an open-ended question that would take too long for them to answer. So that, I feel, is a critical component in being successful that I wish more people paid attention to, because even now, like when I look at people, I feel for them, you know, because I see like, gosh, you're just not going to get anywhere if you stay like this, because no one's going to help you, and the people who are going to help you probably are either not going to have much information, or will have collected a lot of inaccurate information. You know, like they say, the blind leading the blind.
Yeah.
And people, a lot of people get stuck in that rut for that reason.
Mm. Wow. And it is a shame, honestly, because like you say, the blind leading the blind, people just follow anybody who they think has an answer without knowing that this person is leading them to the edge of a cliff.
Mm-hmm. Especially on the internet, because it's really easy.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Really
it's
easy.
Very, very easy. Very, very easy. You know, as you started talking, I read a quote a couple weeks ago, and it was from a guy. He's also a top marketer, and I actually looked at his background and checked out his products and seen that he actually is who he says he is. So he was asking a question, and I also want you to answer this and think about this. But he said that, okay, marketers, who are we to look down upon people who have jobs or who go to work and who work a 9-to-5 when we're alone most of the day? We're sitting maybe in a Starbucks or a Panera Bread or in a home office by ourselves, you know, typing away, tacking away with our thumbs and our fingers at a computer all day, where we're not interacting with people, and we're living a life that's kind of like a loner's lifestyle. And, you know, it really made me think, you know, is it okay to look down upon people who have jobs, or is it something that, you know, do we need to change our perspective as marketers for other people who are comfortable working a job? I mean, what are your thoughts on that?
You know, I don't look down on people who have jobs. So I have a really interesting thought on this. I think that entrepreneurship is not respected.
Mm-hmm.
So we kind of have this thing that anyone can do it. And I don't really believe that anyone can. You know, there are certain personality types, in my opinion, that are more suited for entrepreneurship. But because we have this perspective that anyone can do it, then that's how you end up being condescending towards other people. Because the idea, if you're looking down on someone with a job, you're looking down on them because your pattern of thought is that they could be an entrepreneur. They just don't have the balls, excuse my language, to do it. And they're punking out by having a job. And I don't believe that. I believe that to really stay consistent and to be an entrepreneur, it takes a certain personality type. And everyone doesn't have that. And we need to respect it. Some people are more suited for a reliable, structured environment. Entrepreneurship is not that. It's very risky. It's a lot of roller coasters, ups and downs. It can be extremely stressful. You know, highs and lows. You can have extremely rewarding, and some days you just don't want to get up and face your business. You know, and everybody doesn't have the personality for that. So for someone who wants a more stable, consistent, and I know that not all jobs are stable and consistent, but for someone who wants that, who likes structure, you know, who wants to have like performance reviews and 401ks and Christmas bonuses and all these things, that I don't think there's anything wrong with that, because we should respect entrepreneurship more as being a specific skill set. You don't see a doctor going around looking at everybody like, oh, you're inferior because you could have been a doctor. Because a doctor understands that you have to have a certain type of personality and a level of acumen to even want to do that. Then you got to go through all the trouble to get there. So I don't look down on people who have jobs. And frankly, I don't even know why marketers do it, because if you're going to hire people at some point, I mean, you can't scale a solo business indefinitely. So what are you going to do? Hire a bunch of people and then disrespect them?
Right. Yes. Yeah. You're absolutely right. I mean, you can't do that. And honestly, I agree with you from the perspective of it takes a certain type of personality. I mean, because, you know, I mean, of course, everyone has a different personality. But even with that, not every personality can endure, you know, the being alone and the being the one to make critical decisions for your employees and for and you know, just being
like, even just the responsibility of having them.
Right? Yeah, yeah, absolutely, absolutely. You know, some people can't even enjoy the responsibility of having their own motor vehicle, their own car. So, right. You know, having an employee would be a whole nother set of problems for them.
Absolutely.
So we're closing out. You know, we just passed the 45-minute mark. I want to keep this, respective of your time. And I just want to ask you a few more questions. You know, sure. what do you see as the next big trend in outsourcing?
Oh, that's interesting.
Mm-hmm.
I think if more people start to accept it and look for the opportunities in it, you will start to see in certain parts of the world more structure built. Mm-hmm. You know, like a lot of people know about Indians and programming, and so there are a lot more support systems in place in India for that. You know, the school system has kind of adapted to the fact that a lot of people look to India for programmers. There's a little bit more infrastructure there sometimes. Now people who are working for other companies can kind of work in a facility, or they can work for a company that, you know, allows the rental of that office space. You know, you start to see a lot more support systems in place. And as a lot more entrepreneurs start to pick up outsourcing, because the even in this country, the bulk of growth and things like that does come from small businesses, you know?
Yes, absolutely.
And so I think when we look at shifting the tide with outsourcing overseas, the bulk of that is going to come from small businesses and from entrepreneurs pulling together resources. You have also a lot of Americans and Europeans who've moved to Southeast Asia and set up shop and, you know, set up kind of facilities there to help. And they bring their Western business acumen and understanding how we do things here over there to kind of help facilitate that process. So I think that's going to be a big trend that you start to see more and more of. And the other trend that I think we're going to see is other countries start to understand the opportunity to bring employment to their area where their local employment may not be sufficient to build an economy.
Mm-hmm.
So I think you'll start to see little pockets pop up of very specific skills. I know someone who was in telemarketing in the Dominican Republic and Jamaica and in the islands. They kind of have a telemarketing industry there because of their proximity to the United States, their English, you know, all of those things. So I think we'll start to see more and more industry pockets of this specific types of outsourcing in different areas.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And of course, as things continue to move forward and more people become aware of outsourcing, I think that, like you said, the growth is going to come from small businesses. And one statistic that I'm not 100% sure if this is absolutely accurate, but I believe about 54% of all the sales made in the United States of America come from small businesses. So like you said, as more people, you know, become aware of outsourcing, I think it's going to continue to grow. And I do agree with you. So as we begin to, you know, wrap this conversation up, what are some action steps that you can recommend for our listening audience to take as soon as this call is done? What are some things they need to go do right now?
Well, first, they need to figure out where they want to take their business in 2015.
Mm-hmm.
Because the short-term goal is easier to map out. And then figure out what specifically it's going to take to accomplish that. So maybe someone, you know, I have more experience in retail. Let's say someone wants to create, they want to manufacture a private label product to sell on Amazon. So then they figure out the steps that they need help with. They're going to need help with sourcing, you know, research to find out where the opportunities are, probably some copywriting, maybe package design, things like that. On the creative graphic type side, they may want a video, and then they may want to have a website, you know, to kind of provide the credibility to the brand that they're going to build,
mm-hmm.
and map out those specific steps and then look at how they can utilize a virtual assistant or a graphic designer, because the graphic designer may be on a freelance basis, whereas if you're needing someone to help you research and contact suppliers, that may be someone that you keep consistently because they can help with all the little details. So kind of map out the little steps. One, two, three, four, five. This is what it takes to get me from here to my goal. And then figure out how they're going to have someone assist them with reaching that goal. And I did say a few times that an entrepreneur should try it themselves. You know, so if you're going to hire someone to do your sourcing, kind of get in there and see what it's like, you know, so that you can direct them and guide them. But then also know when to hand that off to someone else so that you don't get so overburdened that you just can't move because you feel like you just have too much to do that you don't foresee how you can possibly do it all. I mean, you kind of get stuck a little bit paralyzed. So I think that's how someone can go and take action is really figure out what your goal is, break it down into steps so that you can get, there's a phrase for it, but I don't remember, but like a small win, you know, because when you have this big, huge goal, it's so much to do before you get there. Yeah. You can get discouraged, but if you can break it down into steps and you can get a small win, that gives you a sense of victory that, you know, gives you the energy to keep going, like a small win. You know what I mean? Like when people want to lose weight, if you go, I want to lose 150 pounds, that may take years, but if you say, you know, in 3 months, I want to lose 10 pounds, that's a small win. And that's going to give you the encouragement to keep going and keep going and keep going. And so with that, you can have someone help you because you'll feel like you're getting something accomplished.
Right.
Even though it's part of a bigger goal, you do have this milestone that you can reach that's going to give you the confidence, you know, to keep moving forward. So if people can do that, that's going to help. Go a long way towards accomplishing whatever it is that they're setting out to achieve in the next year.
Yeah, absolutely. There's a saying that I love, and it's actually what I've used to help build myself into the profession I am today. Inch by inch, yard by yard, it's hard, but inch by inch, it's a cinch.
I like that.
Yeah, so it's, you know, it's, and it makes sense, and it goes right along with everything you're saying, which, like, totally makes sense. Like, I'm totally there with you. So what final words of wisdom would you like to pass on to everyone listening to this call to, you know, help them with their life and their business?
Sure. So the last thing that I want to say about outsourcing is don't think that you're going to go on any site where you can find someone and essentially hire a mini CEO, or you're going to hire like a person who kind of performs a function where they kind of operate the business in lieu of you, and you're just going to go hang out. You're going to have to stay in the role of the CEO, of the manager, and you're going to have specific people responsible for specific things, but the overall accountability of your business is still going to be yours. And even and if you do have people that you hire that can eventually step into the role of having a little bit more influence on the overall process, that's down the line. So in the beginning, you're hiring very specific people to do very specific things. Because sometimes people say things like, I need a project manager. I'm going to hire a project manager. And then the project manager is going to manage all the projects. And then I'm just going to manage the project manager. And then you have to tell them, no, you're the project manager. You know what I mean? Like, if you're fortunate enough over a period of time to find someone that you can hand some of that off to, then you'll be fortunate, but that's not going to happen right now. So that's something really important for people to understand about outsourcing. Like, you're not really going to be able to shortcut certain aspects of it just because the types of people that you would want, you know, in your head, you know, in your ideal situation are few and far between and very difficult to find. But if you can approach it from the perspective of having people responsible for very specific things while you manage it overall, then you can build a team of people that can really help grow the business because you're able now to execute on things efficiently Whereas, you know, before you may have had an opportunity, and if you had to do it all yourself, it just, you had too much on your plate.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. And I think taking a role as a CEO, I think that's one of the most important things that everyone needs to understand about outsourcing is that, you know, you're not going to hire Mark Zuckerberg. You're not going to be able to hire, you know, the Bill Gates of outsourcing. It's just not going to happen. You have to take that role yourself. And I think that's very important. So where can our listeners find out more about you? Do you have a website or maybe somewhere where they can go get more information about you?
Not really.
Okay.
I do have a website, miracleguanzo.com, but it's pathetic. I set it up just so that when you Google me, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So they can look at my website or they can find me on Facebook because I don't really use Twitter and Instagram or any of the other social media networks much outside of Facebook.
Okay, not a problem. Well, what about some of your products? I mean, is there a way they can go and purchase some of your products, maybe, you know, buy some retail items for Christmas or whatever holiday they celebrate?
That's funny. Yeah, they can buy that at Clever. They can go to the website CleverGirlBrands.com.
Okay, so that is CLEVER. Is that, can you spell it out, please?
Clever. CLEVER Girl Brands.com.
Okay, guys. So everyone listening, go to Clever Girl Brands. Am I getting it right? CleverGirlBrands.com and purchase something for your girlfriend, for your wife, for your daughter. Go buy something right now because this has been fantastic, and that's what this is all about. Supporting one another. That's what this is all about. So excellent. So well, listen, Miracle, I want to say thank you so much for your time. I know I've been trying to get together with you for, you know, quite some time now, and I'm very grateful that you've offered your time. And so many golden nuggets today because I picked up a lot. I'm sure our listeners picked up a lot. And I want to say, you know, from the bottom of my heart, genuinely, thank you. And I do appreciate your time.
Well, thank you for having me.
Excellent. So, guys, everyone listening, go take action. Once again, go to clevergirlbrands.com. Go buy something for your girlfriend. Go get your mom a present. Go get something for your nieces and your daughters. Okay. And that is all for now. Miracle Guanzo, the outsourcing expert, and Michael Baptiste signing out. Take care, guys, and make the rest of your life the best of your life.